It was all a pipe dream, watching bodyboarding up on TV. Deep at reef, watching tension repeats, eating bakery feeds at 18, living the dream with no sunscreen. Yeah, we were so keen, surfing Aussie pipe, buying Riptide, eating shit pies.
All right, g'day and welcome to the Riptide Bodyboarding Podcast, the home of bodyboarding. And thank you for joining us on episode 77 of Our Verbal Journaling, and I'm your host, Luke O'Connor. Well, today's guest is quite an interesting cat. I probably say that about a lot of my guests, but this guy really seems to have traveled the world, captured things in quite an articulate and pleasing visual sense. The man has a keen eye for what comes before you in all his latest works, especially, and I've harped on before, and I'll harp on again about it with the Moosementary. I thought some of the editing in that was world-class. He's a West Australian fella who has dedicated his life to surfing, bodyboarding, and just all things creative, all the way from even Paul Kelly clips that I was going back through his gram earlier today and realizing the outreach he has and the number of very, very cool people he's worked with. I'm speaking to none other than Brad Smith, man. Brad-o, thanks for joining us on the potty.
Thanks so much for having me, man.
No dramas, mate, no dramas. Let's go straight into the major piece of work that you're currently working on. And I know it's taken the internet by storm. You've got a lot of cool press through the Illawarra Mercury. You've got press through the ABC. And I know just the bodyboarding world is, you know, it's the flavor on everyone's lips at the moment. The project with Nick Ormerod called Fragor. Can we just talk a bit about that and what sparked that that need and want to get that project out there?
Yeah, man. That sort of started back. Like, I obviously knew Nick from watching him on videos growing up as a young man. And I remember it would have been 2020 or 2021, and like I'd heard all about it. And I didn't actually realize Nick even lived pretty close to me. But I bumped into him a few times, and and then I think Woodsy might have been around as well. And yeah, just over like sort of several occasions, just sort of checked in. I was like, how's it going, man? And yeah, could definitely see he wasn't doing very well. He was like very much in a physiological like recovery mindset at that stage, in the sense that, yeah, he's like, he was, you know, trying to surf, but lots of issues going on there. This like so still really delicate and like so much unknown in that sense. But yeah, I think psychologically as well, he was really, really in the depths of it at that stage. And yeah, so it pretty well came about for me in those times, just being like, as I left, I was just like, as I'd leave him, sorry, in those chats, I was like, oh, dude, like, yeah, if you wanted to, you know, film something or, you know, talk about it and make or create something down the line, man, just let us know, like, no pressure. But yeah, obviously it's pretty incredible. Probably saw him surf with him a few times after that, and like he's obviously an absolute legend of a human being. So it was like, I didn't never sort of continue to push for anything, to be honest. But then, start of last year, he was like, "Oh man, do you want to come have a yarn just down at Ostermere there?" And yeah, we just went down, had a beer, and yeah, he was just like, "I want to make something," and I was like, "Awesome." And yeah, I think it's just sort of shaped up to be far more – well, sorry, I was expecting a pretty mellow thing at the time, to be honest, like mellow in the sense of a sort of a short-form thing. But then, yeah, we sort of kept talking, and, yeah, he's just like, no, I think, like, I'd like to make, like, a feature-length documentary on this. And then, yeah, dude, since then it's been so wild learning more about him and particularly, yeah, what went down, but – mostly the things after that and the vulnerability and all these wild things where I was just like, fuck, man, this is like super daunting for me personally, but like super exciting. I was just like, this is cool. Yeah, pretty I was like personally moved, and I was like, I just reckon if we do this right, like this could be universally relatable, because I just think, yeah, regardless if you surf or not, even, or if you've been had a chronic injury or anything like that, his outlook and, well, especially now, like, he's a very intelligent man as well. It's just sort of just this really inspiring story. Yeah, that, yeah, hopefully we I can do it justice. Yeah.
Oh man, by all the trailers so far and everything that's come out for the Kickstarter campaign, it's been incredibly moving. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you say he's been going through a physiological journey, man, because like, wow, the injuries he sustained through that incident in South Australia. And then, you know, the weeks, months, years after of him dealing with crippling pain and just fighting his way back to some sort of normality is, yeah, kind of leaves you a bit speechless because as
yeah,
you just
touched on, words. Yeah, totally.
It is, man. As you were touching before, Nick is such and still is, but, you know, at the peak of his powers in a bodyboarding sense, he was an idol to so many people, you know what I mean? And his skill, especially in big waves, and definitely in tech, were excellent, but his big wave ability, like watching him scoop into some of the gnarliest heaving pits going around on planet Earth was fascinating. So to see him kind of go back to square one and have to start again, I could only imagine it's going to be such a journey to watch on the big screen, man.
Yeah, man, big time, yeah. Then, yeah, just super, super inspiring. Like he's obviously, he's in pain every day still, like physically from the injury. But yeah, I think the gnarliest part for me is, and those around him as well, is just like back to square one, but then having this brand new perspective, and it's not just the perspective, but actually being, in a sense, happier and looking at it in his own words. Some which sounds outrageous, but in a looking at the accident, sorry, in a positive light, given his outlook on things now, and what something so gnarly happening to him, yeah, I'm butchering this, sorry. Just yeah, he's come out the other side of something so wild and so hairy and just so like rock bottom, like the worst you could ever feel, coming out of anything like that with any kind of perspective, let alone the one he's got now, is just, yeah, I think that's one of the most phenomenal stories I've heard, like, ever, really. So, yeah.
Isn't it insane, man, to see that it is always darkest before the dawn and you see people go through this, you know, life-changing journey when it always starts off with heartache and trauma and just bottom of the barrel kind of shit where no one can fully understand what they're going through. And then you see them, you know, and some don't, but like, you know, the real strong characters do, and they fight their way back to the top, and to hear that, you know, and the top doesn't have to be the top of their sport or the you know, top of perfect health or, you know, whatever you want to put, you want to put figures or the kind of landmarks on it, so to speak. They come full circle, as you said, and get that appreciation for life once again, and find different avenues to kind of shine through with that appreciation. It's very moving, and that's why I think the Fragor documentary has really started to gain traction. And a lot of people are fizzing about it, man, because when you see, when you see that presented in front of them, it gives other people a little bit of a kick up the bottom and some hope and some fucking grit to kind of just get on with life, you know what I mean? And achieve what they want to achieve and realize that, you know, you might have had a bad day, your car might have broke down, fuck, you're fired from your job, you know, all that sort of shit. But really, when you put it in perspective, if you've got your health and your family and your loved ones around you and you're thriving in so many other areas, those small little blimps on the radar don't mean anything. But when your world is shaken like Nick's was, like, you know, I was lucky enough to have him on the potty one of our earlier days. And, man, like,
yeah, I remember, yeah.
I was so honoured to have him on, and I was so honoured that he wanted to speak about it in openly in public. And I could tell there and then, and I've been lucky enough to run into Nick a couple of times after too. Every time he's been progressively get better. But at that time he came onto the podcast, and the tone of his voice, the mannerisms, the way he was speaking about it, you could almost feel he was reliving it.
Totally. Yeah.
Day in, day out, man. So yeah, I'm so excited to see this doco, bro. So what was the time frame? Like, when did you guys start chatting about this, and when are you looking to release it?
So yeah, I reckon that was like maybe March or something, it all, like the initial discussion had, but like we started off like having an absolute shocker. Like my grandmother was really sick, and it was like pumping east swells around cold, like on the Cold Coast there. And like, I reckon it happened 4 or 5 times where every time a swell arrived, I would be going to Tassie. We talked about it. We were just like, God, we could have given up. Like, I reckon most people would have given up like so many times, but have sort of maintained yet. Well, I think Nick said he was just like, you know, if it was easy, like everyone would be doing it. And I was like, well, that's that kind of somewhat become our motto. Throughout it, because I was working full time at the time. So it was like sort of scrapping to, we were just trying to shoot, particularly the surf aspects, everything at sunrise or sunset around our respective works. And then, all the rest of it sort of on the weekends for probably 7 months, I reckon. And then, then I was like, I needed a break. It was just getting really hard to manage for me personally, because I was sort of, at that stage wearing all the hats. But we've had the amazing things, having like so many people and like, funnily enough, all from the Bergen community just reach out, like big ones in James Cates, like Liam O'Brien, Ty Glander, Sean Peterson, like everyone sort of just realized that something was going on and still are, man. Like, my phone's been lighting up like the last week or two with the Kickstarter thing of just people reaching out to be like, we'd love to be involved, like, yeah, if there's anything we can do. And some of them don't even know Nick that well, but like, it's been such a special thing having all these people come out of the woodwork. And without an array of contributors, like, we wouldn't be anywhere near the stage we're at, and we're still, you know, a fair way away, which is what the whole Kickstarter's for, is to, but it's just something this big, and like, just the feature length documentary is just so time consuming and really, it is really expensive. And there's like, it's sort of just going to probably go for like 6 years if we can't sort of get some funding going. And it was, my idea to get the Kickstarter going. I was just like, oh dude, I reckon like, you know, the surf community at large could really just get around that. And, you know, even if just every second person chucks in $5, like, I reckon we can get it home. And but I can't remember what your question was. Sorry, Luke. But
Oh, no, dude. We were just chatting about the time frames and obviously, like, how long you've been putting into it. But speaking about the Kickstarter, man, firstly, where can you find the Kickstarter page? And what's the goal at the end of it? What's the sole amount that you guys need to get this doco up and running?
Yes. The amount is $25,000, and that's sort of with the knowledge that Kickstarter take like 8 to 10% like as fees. So we're like, oh, like, you know, maybe that, I think that's like a pretty good amount to get us going. And that's, that money goes like directly into shooting, because there's a lot more of that to do, like the score, the editing, and distribution if there's any left over from that. But it's just a story that deserves, like, if you know me as the editor in this particular circumstance, is like, if I can just sit down for 3 months without having to worry about keeping the lights on and chasing other work and being distracted, and then actually pay like all these legends that are around us that have been working off their own backs as well, it's just like, that's the one thing I paid an absurd amount of money absurd amount of money from film school, was just like, if you surround yourself with the most talented people at their respective crafts, you can't make anything bad. That's what we've been really fortunate enough to have thus far. But yeah, it's almost capital. So we've got the time to make this as good as we know it can be. Yeah, if that makes sense.
Yeah, man, 100%. And speaking about yourself, Brad, like I was saying in the intro, man, you're a very talented fella, and I know bodyboarding and surfing harbors many talented souls, but, you know, you've been popping up a lot lately, and, you know, you've been around the scene for ages. But what's your background when it comes to a career and a passion, and how did you get involved in bodyboarding and surfing?
I actually grew up in Mandurah in West Australia.
Shout out to the Medj.
Well, yeah, I thought you might say that. I was talking about this to someone yesterday. I was just like, basically when I was 15, that's when I moved to Tassie, sorry. Wedge wasn't the Wedge that we know it today. Like, it was I don't know if you remember, like Tension 9 was just like this giant closeout, or it might have been one of the early ones, sorry. But yeah, it was just this big closeout with a bit of a wedge, and only like Winnie and all those psychos were actually surfing it. So I didn't get the fruits of the anything bowl, as they call it now, that we see all the time. But
yeah. What's changed with it? Sorry, I meant just interrupt you like that. That's fascinating. What has the sand just been formed in a different way now?
Oh, someone should correct me, but I think the breakwall itself has extended a bit. That might have already been there, but I think they just started pumping sand in a different way, or something to do with the pumping of sand into it, like not unlike Snapper and that, where it just Volker actually
– yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, like there's a lot of WA people that will no doubt know far more than me. I think I might have, yeah, ignored it once I left.
Because you couldn't get it.
You're like, it's a tazzy winter. I was just like, I didn't know what. Yeah. But, so –
See, and what part of Tassie did you move to, man? Like you moved from at the age of 15. What was the reason to move, and where did you move into Tassie?
I moved to arguably the worst surf coast in Australia, in the northwest coast, which still definitely gets amazing waves, but it's just incredibly fickle. And the reasons for moving at the time were up. So a lot of my family live in Tassie, and we just had a couple of really sick relatives at that time, and pop just died out of nowhere, and just in Australia, I guess WA is as far away as you can be from Tassie. And I was about to go into year 11 and 12 with my best mates here, and then mum and dad were just like, "Oh, we're moving to Tassie." I was like, oh, "Okay, right." So it was obviously like a real shock to the system then. But yeah, like not long after that, man, that was like a couple of the funnest years of my life, and These days, I've still got lots of good, really close friends here as well. But Tassie's the place I would refer to as home. And yeah, a huge chunk of my best friends and things are as Taswegians. So it was a very strange move at the time, but one I look back on now, I'm really appreciative of. Yeah,
dude, definitely. So from the mainland to Van Diemen's Land, did you
create agriculture land? Yeah,
yeah. Did you cruise into Stanley or Burnie, or like what was the location?
Yeah, oh, not far from Burnie, Ulverston it's called, which is, I don't know if you like, where the Spirit of Tasmania goes into in Devonport.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like maybe like 10 or 15 minutes west of there. So in between Devonport and Burnie, yeah.
Sick, man. That's a pretty working class area with a fair bit of dairy involved.
There's no shortage of that. It's a pretty it's an interesting zone. There's so many incredible people there, but there's a fair bit of farmland, and then it's real working class for sure, but not a lot else going on at this, particularly at the time that I moved there. But a lot of core lads chasing every little ripple as well. It was actually a cool, really cool place to sort of, a somewhat central place, sorry, to be, because you're 3 hours to the east coast, two or so from the west, and about three to get down to a lot of, or three to four of the southern region. So you were sort of in a really good strike mission location to start off with.
Sick, man. And did you spend a bit of time on the west coast? Because I know, I'm not going to name names, but I've had the pleasure of having like a little bit of a go there, and man, there's some zones, eh?
Dude, there's definitely some zones. I spent probably the most amount of time out of any coast, I reckon, on the west. Definitely the most fickle general coast you'll ever come across. But I think that's like part of the beauty is like when you do actually score, because you've worked. I think I remember it was just like we're all sort of working full time, just like tossing onion bags, or all of us pretty fresh out of school. But I think that was almost 20 weekends in a row where we were either going east or west. Like it was the first thing you'd do was just pack the car, jump in and get skunked like majority of the time. But then when you did, like obviously everyone knows the feeling, if you do score with your best mates, like it was like going to war or something, like in terms of the bonding, because it's so cold, so brutal. But when you come in, like if you really got even just like a good wave or a few good ones, you just like look at each other with just such like appreciation and felt like, I guess you just felt like you just really earned what you just scored. And I wouldn't probably do it again, but very thankful for those memories and those experiences. Absolutely.
Well, I think that sort of environment really does initiate keenness and initiates a want for like search and to succeed and just to hunt down some of the better sessions going around, because it's not handed to you in a silver platter. And I know this is thrown a lot around a lot in the bodyboarding and surfing world, where you get people at their front doorstep having all the spoils of Mother Nature and Huey coming together to make sure that they're getting pumping waves on a more regular basis. But then they kind of think that's the norm, and they don't realize that there are so many other people putting in so many hard yards and kilometers on the roads and, you know, airplane tickets and just logistics and trying to work their whole life around to try and get 2 hours in the salt or even an hour just to turn on to actually get some barreling waves. So when you have that search and you have that that true sense of adventure, I think it makes it all the more special.
Oh, dude, yeah, massively. Massively, yeah. I don't think, yeah, God. You go to, I just remember, like, on uni breaks and stuff, like, we'd go to, like, East Coast, like, the Northern Rivers or Queensland, and, yeah, you just hear, like, you just come out of, like the points or something, or, like, Wedge in Hobart, and you were just, like, you're in the water, you can see snow from the ocean while you're sitting there waiting for a wave. You, like, you can see it on the top of the mountains, and then, yeah, you get to somewhere like Queensland, and some dudes in boardies is like, oh, it's pretty brisk, hey? You're just like, oh, man. Like,
you have no idea.
We could trade places just for a week, I tell you what. Yeah, but, yeah, it's pretty funny. But, yeah, I just think you get heaps. Yeah, dude, there is something, like just general life, I guess. Like, if you work really hard for something, like, and you do get there, there's a little bit more to it, I guess. It makes it a bit more special, I guess, yeah.
For sure. The appreciation's really there. Dude, speaking about your time behind the lens and like where it all first started, what was the defining point for you to say, I'm going to pick up the camera or the video camera or any sort of lens in general and start to create? Like, was that always with you from a young age, or was it something developed later on in life?
Definitely from a young age. It's sort of like, it was boog movies, man, and stand-up movies, like a lot of Taylor Steele stuff, but I just used to, I don't know, just really always felt really moved, or like even and musically as well, when you're watching something where I'm like, oh, that just worked. And then I guess when I actually picked up I had a knee reconstruction when I was like 18 or 19. I was like, sweet. And I really liked photography when I was in high school. And I was like, all right, well, yeah, didn't really neg out, which was good at the time. And I just bought a camera and sort of started taking photos, and then had a really talented friend in Nigel Eberhart, Tasmanian, who's an amazing photographer, sort of take me under the wing, and I just learnt so much from him, and that just made, like, yeah, given I couldn't surf, which was everything to me at the time, it was like this whole new kind of chase, I guess, where I was just like, you know, everyone's out there surfing, but I had like no jealousy or whatever. It was just this sort of, yeah, new outlook on things. They're just trying to get these wild angles and taking heaps of out of focus photos. And I was addicted to it for a fair few years. And then, yeah, Matt Tilsley as well, who's like another incredible Tasmanian photographer, and Nick Green was around the scene as well. Like, yeah, Tassie just had like such obviously amazing scenery, and just geographically, it's just such a diverse island in general. So you can really, yeah, you've got a sort of a particular outlook, you can make, yeah, it looks like you're just on another planet sometimes, or it looks like you've just got like eight or thousands of setups in completely different areas. Like, it could be in the desert, then it could be like this really tropical looking background you've got, and or yeah, prehistoric looking zones where these crazy slabs sort of existed. I think just traveling there to get there, the whole journey being better than the destination thing was a huge part of why that was so enjoyable as well. Cause you're just like, yeah, like I said before, like you're just traveling and working really hard to get to these places. But that was actually really fun, cause we just had, they're such good people down there. And like, Yeah, yeah. So that's sort of where it began. Yeah, and then I did half of it. I dropped out of uni in when I was in Hobart, where I met the Wards and a lot of those cats. Yeah, I did half a Bachelor of Arts degree. And I was just like, for like English and journalism, which I was interested in, but I was just like, oh, dude, this isn't me. And felt real down about bailing on that. But yeah, then I went to ended up going, which I wouldn't recommend to anyone either, but to SA like film school in Byron in the Northern Rivers.
Why wouldn't you recommend it?
Because I owe about, I don't know, I think it's like $60,000 or something. It's just
fuck.
It's a private school thing, and it's not to say I had amazing teachers and I had a really, really good time, but like call me before you apply to do that, because I guarantee you I can send you like a bunch of YouTube links and you can just teach yourself. Like,
oh, bro. Like,
yeah.
Dude, talk but, about like Gough Whitlam, free education days, full circle to 60K for fucking a photography degree. And don't get me wrong, it's served you so well, man. Like as I was saying before, like your stuff's incredible and you really know what you're doing, but isn't that just disgusting? I just want to fucking kick dirt in their faces when I hear that, eh? 60K, yeah. Man. Like, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, dude, it's an international privatized university, so it's like there's no prerequisites coming in, so I reckon they probably make, like, I think the usual thing is like 30 or 40 people might start off in the class in the first trimester or whatever, and then like maybe before census date, so like, yeah, usually 80 to 90% of people drop out in that first trimester, and it worked out to be, at least at the time I was there, like 15 to 20 grand. Oh, no, sorry, 5 to 10 grand or something per trimester on a two-year course. So, yeah, cleaning up shop. Yeah.
Hectic. That's a business model that I'm sure a lot of people have copied, and I hear it time and time again with so many people, even some friends here in the Southern Shire, man, like they didn't get the – it was called the UAI at the time, so it might have changed now. It was the score after the HSC and whatever, and they didn't get their desired results, whatever. They had to go through the back door, which is different to your situation, but they had to go through some different colleges. And in the end, some of them got teaching degrees and shit like that for like 70, 80, 90K, and you're like, man, like how – it's like a
– yeah, it's pretty common, dude. House
deposit, man.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's wild. And without getting too much more into it, like – the gnarliest part is the indexation. So it's like, yeah, I think I owe the same amount now after paying it off for like every year kind of thing. Like it keeps getting bigger and bigger each year. So it's like, it's this weird thing where you like feel like you've signed a contract for what it's going to cost you, but it's fully out of your hands how quickly that goes up. And yeah, everyone's in a rough spot. The world's not an easy place to be in financially by any means at the moment. Like, so it's, yeah, just go on YouTube or give me a call if you're a cameraman. And
Dude, fucking shame on the person who ever started putting interest on student loans, eh? It's a real hot topic all around the world at the moment. Yeah, it has been for the last decade or so, because it just seems so irrational to try and heavily tax an up-and-coming population that's going to be essentially the next world leaders or workforce or whatever, you know, and just put them into – essentially like a life-ending contractual agreement, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm not saying you won't pay it off, but it just makes, as you said, so much harder.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
It's fucked, man. I just think to myself, like, how they get away with it. But anyway, let's steer away from that, because I don't want to be negative. But
I got a pretty good busking career going on, man, so I wouldn't worry about me personally.
Yeah, you reckon you're going to nail it? Have you got some good covers, or you got your own material?
Yeah, or just like 14 different versions of Wonderwall, but they're pretty solid. So,
oh, I heard that's a hit on the streets. Hey, not many people are doing it either. So,
there's fresh outlook. Hey, yeah,
yeah. What was your first camera that you first picked up after you blew your knee out?
It was a Canon 450D.
Whoa, I do remember the 450D.
Yeah, dude, I thought I was so gangster when I got it too. It's like, yeah.
And lenses, what were you running?
Yeah, I think I got it all in a stock kit. So it was like an 18 to 35, like real plastic fantastics, and then like a 70 to 300, like Yeah, yep. I reckon. I can't remember how much it cost. Probably like, yeah, I don't know, $1,200. But I was just like, yeah, son. Yeah. 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 But yeah, just so much joy. But yeah, big shout out to Nigel Eberhardt, because I just remember for like, oh, God knows how long I was taking these awful photos for, dude. But he was just like, dude, you got a really good eye, but like, your photos are so soft. And I was like, oh, like, what do you mean by soft? And then he just like, because he'd have his camera next to me, like taking the same photos, basically like similar angles or whatever. And he'd just show me his on his 5D. And also has been, as I said, he was just incredibly talented and silly as a photographer. I was just like, holy shit. Okay, I understand. Thank you very much for sharing that really valuable insight. Yeah. But,
and
yeah.
How did you go from soft to sharp? Like, what were the key settings that he got you to work on that really made everything click?
Just paying attention, I think, to the shot, like paying attention to things being in focus. I mean, your aperture and all that stuff comes into it. But, yeah, it was just like my brain would just hyper-focus on, like, I guess the composition, not to say that there were much chop at that time, but that was sort of what I was like. I was always trying to run down the end of the beach and get heaps of foreground and try to have like a real sort of big field of the shots. And he's just like, yeah, that's all well and good, but if the subject's out of focus in this circumstance, like, it's just not a good photo. Like, it's, yeah. Then, yeah, it was pretty, yeah, really lucky to sort of have someone like that, yeah, to share that sort of insight at such a young age. Yeah, because Lord knows, end up doing anything else.
For sure, man.
And have these sort of connections that you're lucky enough to have, yeah.
Definitely. And someone to be honest, that is a real...
And delicate too, yeah.
Yeah. The honesty, like in a nice way, so it's not too overbearing and crushes you, but it's like, hey, man, this is constructive criticism. I'm just trying to let you know where you can improve as a friend, which is... It's a hard thing to do to deliver it properly.
I just continually look back on that and just, yeah, I'm so thankful for people like him. Yeah, early on in the piece. Yeah.
So you finished, was it two years up in the Northern Rivers there at Byron Bay in your film school and photography, and yeah. What next, bro?
Then I think I started landscaping for a bit after that. I stayed up there for another year and I absolutely loved it. Like
on the tools, hey. There's something about being on the tools for certain periods of your life. It's rewarding as fuck, hey. Just a shovel, just wet on the brow, mate, a little bit of dirt on the knees. Didn't fucking go astray, does it? Does not go astray.
No, you're just fit as a fiddle. And particularly landscaping, dude, you're outside. There's not really any politics that can happen on a construction site. It's just like, yeah, big fan of like, the A to B dance, like he's the before and after, like he really can just see the progress in front of you. And I got pretty hooked on that. But then very good, another Tassie friend in Sam Brumby, who's still in Stanny, who was a big contributor for the Moosementary intro. It was just like, dude, if you're landscaping, I've got a heap of work down here. He's in Stanmore Park. So come down. And yeah, went down and tried to freelance for a year, really unsuccessfully because I just didn't really know anyone. Sort of you got to build your way up. And then, yeah, dude, I wasn't actually doing like much filming or editing stuff for a fair while. Even like, I was editing up until COVID, like pretty corporate stuff, like some fun parts, but yeah, pretty sort of. Primarily pretty soul-crushing, corporate-y, sort of sporty edits, like nothing particularly creative or anything.
And you had a real strict brief where it was like, hey, we want you to tick these boxes, X, Y, and Z, and it must be delivered on this time frame and with this budget kind of thing.
Yeah, and I still do that stuff now because it's like that's where the money is. Like if you kind of juggle it, like, yeah, you do a couple of those days per week or per fortnight and you're like at least – that's, I think, every sort of like freelancers or artists' dance is to see, have that sort of financial stability there. And then if you're not, ideally, you're not too burnt out, then you've actually got a bit of time for one, but like, yeah, mental space to actually give like creative, like music videos or whatever they may be, like you've got the energy to make those how you want them rather than them feeling like a job as well. It's just like, oh, no, like, this is what this looks like in my brain. Like, Yeah, and I think that's like the hard, like really hard balance to obtain, and not one that I'm saying I've solidified either by any means. But yeah, you sort of just after doing it for a little while, you're like, okay, like can't really say no to that job. Say yes, and then but eventually you do have to say no, and then be like, you know, you just get trapped, I guess. Like, you know, not hanging any negative light on being like a wedding person, like a photographer or a videographer, but like, because there's so much coin in there and like you can do some really beautiful stuff. But that I did it like 10 or 20 weddings. I was like, man, I just can't like sort of handle this. And that's what the next sort of 2 or 3 months at that stage looked like. I was just like, this is not why I personally got into this dance. And also,
corporatized love, man, it's so fucking heavy. Like, you know, Lauren and myself got married. We had Sam Bannon and Cameron Staunton come down and shoot and video the wedding and the day. And like, we were stoked. They're really good friends. And that was, it was a beautiful present from them. And you know, like we were so grateful. But I've also thought about that in the way that if you don't know the person and it's corporatized, love essentially is what you're shooting, because you are there for the dollars. You are capturing a beautiful moment between two people, or a moment that's probably going to be a fleeting one and they're going to break up in 3 months' time. Either way, you're there just to capture that moment and then to turn it into a financial gain, which, again, everyone's going to make money. There's a want and there's a need there. But I fully feel you with that, because it almost feels hollow and empty by the end, because you're like, I'm not really involved in these people's lives or whatever. I'm just here to capture that special day and then just to churn out the photos as best as possible, and also make it look so fake and magical to then put online to say,
give me more.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I mean,
yeah, no, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a heavy situation there, and it's some people can do it and just treat it as work, but then others, like much like yourself, it sounds like you can't let that creative muse come into the scene and be corporatized, I guess.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've got like a couple of really good friends here, and I look at their work and I don't know, they love it and they make a killing out of it, and it just doesn't actually like. And I would say it's still creative in the sense that they do it like they've got a really like well functioning system going on, where like 6 months of the year, one particular friend, his life is just, he'll be pumping out like, you know, 3 or 4 weddings a week, but it just doesn't bother him. He doesn't get jaded by it like I do. Like, he's just like, he's really good with people. He knows the system. But then, yeah, that other 6 months, or you know, around that amount of time of the year, he's surfing like in Fiji or Indo, and I'm like, well, and he has he's just doing really well, and you're like, if you can make it work, like, it's incredible. And
for sure, if you can flip the switch off and you can be that person, definitely, and see for what it is. It's just when it comes down to your own personality, I think I'd be more on the latter side, much like yourself. I'd look too deeply into it, or wrongly, and just be like, oh, fuck, I don't know if I'm doing this the right way, da 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 da. You know, or like, am I spending my time incorrectly? But then at the same time, like, as I said before, there is a need for it. You know, there is a one. I also know, have a couple of really good mates who are the same thing. And you're like, well, if that's floating their boat and that's all sweet and
If it works, it works, man.
If it's paying the bills. Like, you look at, you know, I do pools, man. Like, there's some days where I'm just like, fuck this pool.
Do you do them with Coops?
I was doing them with Coops, and I learned so much with him. And then started my own thing. And I still, I only spoke him just today, man. And we always have a good banter about it. But yeah, there's some days where you're like, what am I doing with my life? You know, so I think everyone. Of us, those moments, especially in an empty concrete shell, man. There's a couple of times with him in the middle of like winter, bro, and like, he works hard. Like, hats off to Sean Cooper.
I was just thinking, it's a lifesaver in those circumstances that you've got a mate, like a funny friend, like to do it with. Like,
Me and him had a ball there, man. It was sick. But I'm often on my own. I've recently got a younger fellow, Tyler Fraser-Rigg, who's come on to do some water balancing and like pool maintenance and stuff. But yeah, it's like you have your good and your bad days, and I guess everyone's earning coin for, you know, however they can by any means. But you also want to have like that little bit of, you know, self-credibility in your work and be happy with what you're doing instead of just kind of going through the motions. So, yeah, with the wedding photography thing, if you're into it, you're into it. But if you're not, it can play on your mind, man.
Oh, dude. Fucking psycho. Yeah, dude. Yeah. Nah. Couldn't agree more.
Like, and so, dude, you've gone from WA, man. You've gone to Tassie. You've gone to the Northern Rivers in New South Wales. And then you've come down to Stanley and you've ended up kind of solidifying yourself in the Gold Coast region. Like, you've lived in a lot of different states and areas of Australia, like a huge variety, really, except kind of the NT almost, you know? Like, what was that always a plan? Like, are you a bit of a nomad? Do you enjoy traveling from space to space and kind of mixing it up every 5 or so years?
None of it was planned, hey, man. Like, none of it. But now it's something I've found, like, that I'm not, like, restless definitely to get away to like new zones all the time and stuff, and I love being on the move, but now that whole it sounds outrageous, it's a full mixed bag, but it was all, I guess, those sort of four primary zones that I've ended up in have just been following my nose or just been like an opportunity or whatever to just be like, yeah, sure, I'll come do that. Like, and now, yeah, I'm in Wu-Tang now, like a bit south of Thoreau, but I realize it's been like 7 years this year, I think, which is, yeah, by, I guess, since I was, 21 or something. But, yeah, I haven't lived anywhere that long. And it makes sense because it's such a hard place to leave. It's just sort of got everything, in my opinion, for me at least. But, yeah, I wouldn't say I'm always nomadic. There's like, you know, a bit of a seasonal cat in that regard, but I know how absurd that they're like, no one seems to know where I'm from. I'm like, oh yeah, no, but I feel, I guess, I think maybe early on in the piece I was like, oh, this is not going to be good for you, like, to be sort of, I wasn't a child, I guess, so it's like a bit different. Like, I still felt really stable and got a, like, really lucky to have an amazing family and stuff like that, but now I just feel really spoiled that I feel like I've got four homes or something. Like, every time I go to those particular zones, like, there's, I just know, like, there's so many good people there. And then, I guess that's the beauty of, like, traveling. If that's something you do as well, like, it's the, for me at least, like, it's the people you meet and the connections you make and stuff. So, I certainly wouldn't deem myself a full-blown nomadic sod, but, I don't know. I feel very lucky for a strange upbringing, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, man, there's no greater sport than bodyboarding and surfing in that matter to bring together people from all parts of the globe or all parts of Australia, which, you know, a huge continent itself. Like,
yeah,
you really do harbour so many different relationships and create so many different networks with people within the industry and within the community, and you've landed yourself in one of the most, like, kind of, I wouldn't, like, definitely wave rich areas, but just like good cunt areas, you know what I mean? Like, there's good people down there, bro, you know what I mean? Like, and sick waves also, I'm not taking away from that, but just good energy down there, man, like good people, great lifestyle, as you said, huge escarpment behind you, a variety of different towns, still not taken over by the big bad city up north. And, like, I know it's getting busier and a lot of city insiders are moving down there because they realise the commute into the smoke is pretty easily done when you come back to the white picket fence and the beautiful old Illawarra cottage homes. But is that the reason why you've stayed there for so long? You just nestled in and kind of felt like, fuck, there's probably no better place for me.
Not necessarily, dude, but certainly from the longevity of how long I've been there now, like, it really does feel like home. And, like, I've contemplated, and my partner and I have, like, heavily considered just being like, oh, and maybe even next year, like, do you want to just go try somewhere else out for a year, just because we sort of can, we don't have children yet or anything like that. Like, we still sort of have freedom in a sense to, I guess, just consider those prospects. But I think for me personally, it's just like, like you said, like, there's Sydney siders moving down, but, like, on the other side of that spectrum there, like, I get to be really close to Sydney, which is obviously just full of work if I need it, full of music, which is, like, a massive thing. And then, yeah, only like a few hours away from genuine world-class waves and surrounded by pretty consistently fun waves. Yeah, so, and just, yeah, lots of incredibly good people from just, yeah, all walks of life, which is just the thing that keeps it really fresh and balanced. And yeah, just for, again, just super spoiled to have, like, and go hang out with a bunch of introverted musicians and have a fantastic evening, and then go hang out with Moose and watch my IQ plummet. But
and extroverted as fuck.
Yeah, go proper extrovert. Yeah, yeah. But no, just really blessed to. Yeah, I'll probably get bashed for saying that. It's all right.
he takes really. A joke. He knows he's the life of the party, that bloke. Oh, there's no one that I've seen good. Can razz up energy like Moose. Like, even when he turns up.
He doesn't stop,
eh? He's got unbridled amount of energy. Like, it's incredible to see. He's like, you know, people talk about, like, a Duracell bunny man or something like that. Like, he is just... Yeah, everlasting, man. It's psycho.
He's just perpetually having a red hot go, that lad. So yeah, hats off to him for sure.
For sure, man. And it's shown in the Moosementary. And I love, and I've got to say this on air, man, like the start of the Moosementary, I love how you've gone the kind of Hollywood feature film drive-esque kind of intro, you know, where you've got that similar sort of music. You just look all the angles, like the drone angles, the wide angles, the close-ups of his face. So serious, so like driven, you know, pardon the pun. Yeah, and then when you have Harry Bryant come in and run over the Moose at his local down in Stanley, it just cuts it into this comical scene that just, it put a smile on my dial, man. Like, what was behind the Moosementary and where did you get the kind of concept from?
Oh, thanks, man. I think I've had that that loose idea for a fair while, like just, I guess, getting hit by a car as the kicker.
it's a good one. It definitely catches your attention.
Yeah, which in a lot of the things that I do, I get, like, the way my brain works, I think a lot of the time is almost starting off with the end, like the kicker in this circumstance. And then, yeah, I just think it just, everything sort of married itself, like, really organically in that, in the sense that if he's getting hit by a car, then like, let's just go. So like, try and make this look as baller as possible, have him looking so serious, like have him thinking he's the man vaping his car and all this stuff. Like, yeah. And then, yeah, Sam Brumby like shot all of that. So I could call the shots, and like Billy Danzy, Jack Irvine, just all the local Stanley lads got involved. And we sort of just, there's probably only like 3 hours or if that, worth of work that went into that, it's as far as the actual shooting of it. And then Harry was, yeah, around at that time was like, yeah, kind enough to just jump in and do the scenes, even though I think I pulled all the boys away from their beers at that stage. But yeah, and obviously they're like massive characters on their own, and Woodsy and Harry. Yeah,
good. I think I called those two, eh?
Totally, man, totally. And I didn't do much directing for that particular scene as far as the banter. Just, I think I remember looking at Brahm being like, oh, fuck, like had that, I was just like, not that it's the end of the world, but I was like, well, I can't really call on them to do that again. But I can't remember what it was exactly, but it just worked. And then it actually, because it just worked, it worked even better than I sort of had it planned in my head as far as the back and forth. Yeah, but yeah. I think there was no mood board. There was no script or anything like that. It was just like, let's just make him look as gangster as we can and get him run over. And then the rest is history.
Fuck. Yeah. And then all the waves come in and all the different people that contributed from like Matt Seckler, yeah. Steve Wall.
Oh, dude. Yeah. Yeah. So, Woodsy had all that stuff. And then Woodsy, I was like, do we have a song? And he was the one that came up. With had the Bee Gees there, and then again, that's just another thing that happened on its own. Like, I think I just went on YouTube and ended up ripping the song from there, but I ripped the videos as well. And then I was like, oh, that's pretty, that kind of works as filler. Like,
so good.
Nice to just do things, you know, if you can make things sort of fresh, even if it's a bit risky, I just reckon that's always a lot more entertaining and has more potential to sort of last the test of time. as opposed to just something, yeah, you might have seen over and over. So, yeah, sort of having a real dilemma with Harley's footage at the moment that he's been sort of saving all these clips and they're like, there's so many good waves in there. And I'm, yeah, trying to figure out how to do something. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're over in WA right now. I know you've been, you know, surfing and cruising and hanging out with Harley a fair bit. You guys have always been mates for a fair few years now. And just thinking about what that man's done on the Boog, he's in this year's Shark Island Challenge, 2024 Bodyboard King Shark Island Challenge. Shout out to Tobes. And he has got a huge piggy bank worth of fucking footage he's been holding on to. Like, what is the concept behind that project, man? And you know, like, again, this kind of indicates to me too how many fingers you've got in different pies, bro. Like, fucking hell. Like, Fragor, you still got all your freelance stuff. You're doing stuff with Harley. You know what I mean? Like, you've probably done a couple of days of landscaping here and there, trying to get waves yourself. Like, where are you finding the time to pull this out?
Yeah. I wish I was doing a bit of landscaping. That sobers me up, gets me off the screen for a bit. It's good for you, I reckon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But yeah, so with Harley, man, like, what's the go? Like, what's the direction there?
I think I just had a bit of a buzz. Like, the Moose Mantry actually was, that was during COVID, and I all the sort of artwork sort of stopped at that time, and I was just laboring, sort of just to get, I think I just been through a breakup at the time. I was like, oh god, and then a mate offered me a job. I was like, oh, I think this would be pretty healthy to keep, yeah, just to be out and about at a time where you were like, obviously told you can't really go very far. And I can't remember how long I did it for, like a bit too long for sure at the end. But yeah, then Woodsy gave me that footage, and then I was just like, I guess it was just this nice thing of remembering, like, really enjoy that stuff, particularly because it was like, I tried to make it funny, so it was like pretty enjoyable and there was no real deadline. But that was, in a sense, like something that got me right back into, being in that sort of film video world. And then, yeah, I was just sort of overwhelmed at the feedback from that at the time. Like, just, you know, without sounding, well, that shit might have sounded, without sounding like too much of a groupie, I just remember like Chris White, who obviously I just grew up like studying his films, like religiously as a teen, just like lots of us did. And yeah, he was just like, dude, that was amazing. Keep them coming. And I was just like, oh, fuck, that's pretty special. Like,
that's such good feedback, eh, from a god.
Yeah. Yeah, again, it's just those like special little things that if you're lucky enough to have them can sort of, yeah, change the your course. And then, yeah, from there, I sort of just got all my shortcuts back and my mindset back just into, yeah, sort of turbo editing mode and shooting. And yeah, and I think after COVID, I just remember saying to Amy, my partner, I was just like, I'm just going to start from the bottom, no pride, and which is kind of what I did. And, yeah, just did a heaps of unpaid work, like that was the creative side of things. And then, yeah, the ball just kind of kept rolling. And then I think I might have even reached out to Harley. I was like, are you sitting on any footage? Like, well, the going's good. I think I was just really motivated after that sort of little period. And it took a while to get the footage. And then, yeah, God, we were looking through it yesterday. I was just like, he couldn't remember some of the ways, man. He's just like, when was that? And I was like, how would I know, Harley? Like, it's you. So, like, but he's banked that many, like, yeah, properly good, really solid clips. When he's not breaking hearts, he's fine to time. But, yeah.
Oh, he's a bit of a Casanova, old Harley.
He's a handsome man. We'll leave it at that. But
he is for sure tall, striking, and knows how to do a big air fozzle out of a shippy's end bowl. So yeah, he's a catch.
He does. He's an absolute catch. Yeah. So yeah, got a few things coming. Yeah, they're it's really nice to have those sort of passion projects. Yeah, like that. That sort of breathes a bit of life and. Yeah, just things you enjoy, and they're just like they're just mates as well. So it's like if you can kind of make something cool that's well received with your friends, like it's sort of, yeah, without sounding too lame, like pretty dreamy gig, really. Like, yeah,
it is, man. It is, and it's only going back to the points before about all the different locations you've lived and the networks you've created, and then as you know, life blossoms on. They all come to fruition, and you can just enjoy it, you know, and. Yeah, it's cool to see that your creative outlet can be accompanied by so many incredible people. Like, it's, yeah, Harley Ward's definitely a very good bodyboarder, like a very damn good bodyboarder. And some of the things done on the bridge is incredible, eh?
Yeah, dude, he's, yeah. Just watching him out at North Point yesterday, which was so big and so hard to surf for everyone. But he's always in the spot. And just for, like, a behemoth, like, he's a eucalyptus tree. He's just so special. And, yeah, dude, it, yeah, sort of just that Glenn Thurston sort of build or whatever. But, yeah, there's something special about his composure and his brother Charles as well. Just, like, they're just so – they just look really, really good in the big stuff, like it's meant to be or something.
For sure, man.
Never get tired of watching that stuff. Like, yeah.
Yeah, they've got hearts of lions, man. Those two, they're absolute psychos. And yeah, there's something in the water down there in Tassie.
Yeah, and the Thomas brothers, yeah, similar realm. Just
for sure, man.
They're all just psychos, and they're loving life. So it's like, yeah, it's really nice to see.
Well, it's so good to see that, like, a you know, generations of Tassie bodyboarders. You know, each generation seems to just get stronger and stronger. It started out kind of with the Wards and now the Thomases, and, you know, you've had Sone before, and I'm sure it's going to be after too, but it just seems like there's a really strong scene down there at the moment. And yeah, they're all feeding off each other, which is epic.
Yeah, dude, just super tight knit community. And yeah, very excited again to see how those lads go in the upcoming Shark Island Challenge, which has got some real buzz about it, I reckon. So yeah,
we're frothing to have them there, man. Frothing so much, just because they know to ride big pits, and they won't hold back, and that's kind of what you need. And we just need to pray and hope that Huey delivers one of those blobs that hits Tassie and makes its way up into the East Coast and regenerates itself, and we'll be on. They could even get a swell at Chippies, and then the next couple of days head on up east and maybe ride the same walls of energy and go from there.
I might get spat out on the island with a bit of luck.
Yeah. You know? Big blowout, eh? Just travel, what do you reckon, like 1,600 kilometres? Cheers.
Yeah, gentlemen, 16, I'd say, for sure. Yeah.
So good. Oh, dude, I really forgot to ask you before. Like, you know, we talked about your time holding the camera and, you know, how you developed that skill set. But what moved you on to videography and what got you behind the video camera?
That was probably aforementioned. I think, just loving movies. Like, and that, yeah, obviously there's like lots of similarities, but they are just like these separate worlds in that sort of documenting thing sense. But I think, yeah, maybe it's just a natural progression that I feel like lots of photographers sort of do. You're just like, oh, let's have a play with video. And like, yeah, every other day I'm like, God damn, I wish I was a photographer again, just so I could have a backpack and travel around rather than like four Pelican cases. But yeah, dude, I think it was just being, I guess for me personally, like, you can sort of do your best. It is in a different sense, but like making people feel a certain way, I feel like it's a lot more personalized through film or through video, as opposed to like a singular image or a collection of. Like, I still think they're both, yeah, obviously have complete merit in their own regards, but yeah, I think the music component's a really big one for me personally. And yeah, just that evoking of emotion, I think, whether that just be getting like amped in a surf clip or, you know, trying to make someone cry or feel how you want. I guess when you get real into it, like, you're trying to sort of make people feel how you feel. And if you do that as close to the way that is you, like, it might not work, but that's usually when the best art's made for anyone, I reckon, like from all the heavy hitters like Tarantino or anyone, like, he's, yeah, it's a pretty cliched example, but yeah, I just think it's the certain sense of just being a little bit deeper to a reflection of who you are and your outlook on whatever the subject may be. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. Well, I guess it brings a couple more elements into it. Like, you can.
That would be a succinct way of putting it, yeah.
No. But you were coming across loud and clear there, man. Like, it was a good insight in your mind, because it's like, yeah, there's so many other layers you can put on top of videography or film, you know, that will evoke the emotion out of the watcher or the viewer, so to speak. And then you'll get and you know, really good photos can do that too, but it's quite hard to lay a soundtrack or, you know, motion into like a photo. Some just sing back at you, but with film, in my opinion, and videos, it's like you can almost see yourself in them sometimes, because like the way the music or the scene set or whatever, you can relate it back to a moment in your life or a time where you felt that moment, you know, like even with the intro to fucking Musumeci and you're driving, like there's times when you're doing long road trips where you almost feel like you are just the fucking king of the highway, and you are locked and loaded behind the wheel, man. You're just a speed demon. Nothing's going to upset your flow. And then that's why I guess that change up in the scene when Harry does hit Dane, it's like, it's almost a crash back to earth. It's indicating that, you know, you are just another human on this planet, and you're going to go through a wide range of emotions, and you can have, you know, the glory just so quickly taken away from you and hit rock bottom. So I got that out of the Musumeci, and I kind of felt that's why it was such a grabbing moment.
No, I'm glad to hear that. It's nice to hear. Yeah. Those sort of things, man. But I think also, it's always just really nice to make people laugh too. Like, that sobering reality aspect you just spoke of. Yeah, it's just like, we're all human at the end of the day. Like, it's nothing. I think it's nice to have sort of both aspects. Like you
and
said,
bodyboarding's good at it, man, too. Bodyboarding
really is good at it. It's just super real. Like, and I think that's, as I said, in its own sort of way, whole intro bit really sort of figured itself out on its own in a strange sense. Which I hope did it some justice in terms of that bodyboarding thing. Yeah.
Well, you definitely did. And I think if you look back to you only mentioning Chris White's comment too, if he was taken by it and some of the stuff he produced through Tension and how he weaved his comical genius into, you know, some of the world's best Bergen, then it's a nail in the head. It's like the recipe we all want. And, you know, you look at his podcast, The Grim Reapers, you listen to him speak and, you know, you ask some serious questions to some very high-level athletes or, you know, world figures or musicians or politicians or like whoever he's had on.
People, big time.
Yeah, he mixes it up with like some serious stuff and then some light, you know, humor and banter and even the prank calls. Like that's what people want to see and feel, you know. Like I feel like comedy's been cancelled out in certain ways and some of the wokeism is seeping into certain parts of life that it just doesn't need to be in. And when you come back to bodyboarding, the best thing about it is it's just raw as fuck, and you've got those characters and those degenerates, so to speak, in the sport that you've just got to, like, love. You know, like you listen back to the Jono Bruce and Grim Reapers potty, and, like, he's a classic example of someone who is so left of center, but he's one of the most brilliant, if not the most brilliant bodyboarders to have ever lived when it comes to tech bodyboarding. But then you've got that other side of him where he's just this outrageous human living his own way, and he's got so many idiosyncrasies to him, you know. So like that's what I'm getting at. Like there's characters in the sport,
walks of all life, dude. Just like an insane amount of diversity. Everyone's their own people, and I feel like the sport itself really just encourages you to be yourself, and I just think that's so important, like in a universal sense, I guess. Like nothing worse than sort of being trapped pretending to be something you're not or whatever, like, which unfortunately happens to a lot of people. But I think, and similar to skating as well, like your style, what you do, how you spend your time, how you feel, you're extroverted, introverted, like it's all of it's okay, all of it's like wonderful and should be perpetually encouraged as well. Like it's sort of what makes the sport so beautiful, I reckon.
Did you get behind the drag films, man? Did you get any inspiration from them?
Oh, big time, man. Yeah, I think that first one, especially, that was just, and what Dav's done as well, like in terms of, which has been spoken about heaps, but just the cultural shift between like the whole rift or whatever you want to call it between like stand-ups and bodyboarders, like, you know, if you look at what's happened with Shark Island now with Noah Dean getting the wild card, like if Dav didn't have the influence he has had and like and lots of other contributors there as well, but like, yeah, would we be seeing that? But irrespective of that, I just think it's amazing. Yeah, it's the coolest thing ever. And it's just broadening a community, really, in my opinion. And again, sort of touching on just everyone being able to be themselves and, and watching how things just progress so much faster if you're all sort of on the same wavelength, in a sense.
Working together as a team almost, eh? Like, it's sewing things back together because even Cronulla, that community's grown even further, man. Yeah, it's like, you know, before there was a huge division out the Cape and the Island in regards to surfers and bodyboarders, and there was certain times that the Bra Boys would get called if bodyboarders were out there from certain surfers, and, you know, that's all kind of gone in the wayside now because we're all community out there just having a good time. Don't get me wrong, it's still a circus at times because, like any good wave on the coast, you're going to get so many people turn up wanting to get their slice of the pie. But when it comes when it comes to that harmony in the lineup with just people riding waves, like, it doesn't matter what craft you're on, as long as you're riding the wave properly and utilizing it to the best ability or just having fun and just doing it for the love of it, then I think that's what makes it so pure. And there's those fleeting moments that, you know, sometimes take for granted, but then when you're out there, you realize that, like, fuck, I'm part of something special. This is a special moment connecting with, you know, different parts of like the community and then nature, and then riding these weird fucking waves of energy that's been created so far away in some distant land, like it's a distant part of the ocean. It's it's cool to come together on the same kind of level playing field and realize we're all in it for the same reason and not just, you know, you look down on someone else for their riding like a lesser craft. You know, the only thing I'll fucking say about that is, mate, that fuck, don't bring your sups out at Cape, you know what I mean? Fucking sups on the shore and we'll be sweet.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, for sure. I just think within surfing, like, the whole thing's absurd. Like, you being like, you are just, it's just all these exchanges of energy, all this, like, can be lots of hostility, but, like, you know, life in general, without trying to be sound too big picturesque, it's like, it's all pretty absurd. So it's just like important to sort of remember. And I think, like, surfing waves on whatever craft and in whatever sense you like, is just don't try not to take anything too seriously. It's just like such a waste of time. Like, and just have fun. Like, that's why we all do it, I guess. Like, yeah.
It's probably the greatest motto to come out of the drag films, you know, like,
yeah, totally.
Don't be too serious about it. Like, I think there's a time and a place for that. I think there also is a time and place.
Oh, there is. Yeah.
In the water, if you're a competitive athlete. But, on a whole, the essence, if you're just doing it as a pastime, a leisure activity, exercise, be part of community, it should just be for the fun of it. And there shouldn't be any angst or craziness in the lineup when it's just people catching waves, eh?
Yeah, well, I say that, and then I get it, as angry as anyone in the water as well. So I definitely understand both sides. Like,
bro, I'm the same.
If you're in amongst that sort of noise, but yeah, overall,
fuck damn.
Even then, like, yeah, you just try to step back and be like, well, fuck, it's not really helping anyone. Yeah, again, time and a place, but dude, if you can sort of maintain that overall mindset, at least, it usually holds you in pretty good stead.
Have you ever had a crazy meltdown or blow up in the water that's just been one of those moments where, you know, you could have been the wrong, the other person could have been the wrong, but you kind of just had to check yourself after and be like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, dude, I've had a couple. I had a funny one in D-Bar ages ago. When was that? That was on a uni break when I was early 20s. It was 2 foot. And it was so small and it was so shit. And this dude just kept snaking. And I think this stand-up dude kept snaking me. And then I just went one. And he was like, yep. And I was like, no way. Like, I didn't look at him or anything. I just went. And it was like, this is pathetic how bad the waves were. And he blew up and was just like, oh, I can't even remember what he said. But he just got so angry. And I was just like, dude, it's so small, man. Like, are you actually serious? And I paddled back out. I was really offered by that stage. I paddled back there just out of sort of principle. and sat there again. And then, I got a real shitty one and just went to like the next peak down and was just like, Christ. And then I like looked over and he was like paddling pretty aggressively towards me and he was far bigger than me. I don't know how to fight either. So I was like, oh my God, are you serious? But yeah, he just apologized. He just was like, bro, I'm really sorry. Well, I actually bodyboard. Like, I'm really sorry. I just lost my cool there. I was just like, oh, all good, man. No worries. Like,
wow, yeah. That worked out really well, bro. That's
it. It was like the most bizarre experience ever. Like, I was really perplexed for a while. Even saying it now, it sounds made up. But then I told, I was with like a bunch of Tassie lads and a couple of Queensland lads as well at that stage. And they were like, yeah, that happens. And I was just like, oh, I don't really want to surf here that much anymore. Like, it's pretty, just really strange behavior. But yeah, you get a bit older and you're like, well, everyone's pretty strange. Everyone's got their things going on. I haven't been in too many gnarly ones because I'm usually over the years gotten better at talking. I don't know. Try to talk your way out of things rather than, things getting physical.
And have you ever witnessed a full-blown punch on the water where you're like, holy shit, bruh?
Not like real close up, nah. I've some heated Demekis for sure. but no, I've heard of them. Like, yeah, I've had a few phone calls in recent times going into depth about them, but nah, never seen the flying fists in the flesh, but actually avoid and it's probably the Tassie in my blood as well. Like I try not to surf with crowds as much as possible. And particularly those zones, I lived in the Northern Rivers for a while and you take the stick out of the pass and that's probably the angriest I've ever been where I'm just like, oh my God. I just don't do well with that space in general, whether that's in the water or on land. Like, yeah, so that's probably sort of, saved me from, being amongst too much ruckus. Yeah.
That's good. That's really good. Like it's a nice thing to remove yourself from it, not worry so much about it, and just take yourself out of the situation rather than pursuing it.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, I mean, and that's me though, that doesn't chase, I'm not chasing swell events or anything and that's just where that stuff just organically happens. Like it'll always happen. Like, if someone's going to be really good and everyone's there, there's usually going to be one person that's doesn't get it or whatever. So you can certainly, I still very much understand how those things can erupt. It's just not my cup of tea, my kettle of fish. Like, yeah. Can empathize with it happening for sure.
Fuck yeah, definitely, man. We all come from time to time, different situations, different people. Dude, yeah. Fragor, man, just back to it before we round this thing out. Like, like we were obviously speaking about the timeline before, but like, what are you up to in the project at the moment? And like, what are you and Nick working on currently? Is like inputting the waves, or is it more kind of setting up some of the the intro scenes, or like leading segues into different parts of the documentary? Like, what are you really working on right now?
It's working on the chapters at the moment, like in a pretty rough sense, but. Because there's so many themes sort of throughout it. And the current challenge is just getting it almost like doing a sort of base docking of to get a rough length. It's probably looking at 100 minutes or something at the moment, which is just outrageous. But that's sort of the process, is just like, all right, here's this section, and then this is just in the editing aspect of it also. But just sort of figuring out the narrative and how one the transitional sense in terms of the editing, like why does that relate to that? And like, how do we get here from there? And cutting the fat as well, because we've done 3 to 4 interviews now, like and including separate voice recordings of Nick, like, which has been incredible because he's been so honest and vulnerable. And I'm still, the more I've sat with it, like super moving, but so much I didn't know still. And that's after spending so much, like a fair bit of time, and been really nice getting closer with Nick as well, for sure. But yeah, you just keep, yeah, I guess it's a really positive thing. It's quite emotionally demanding at times, though, to be honest as well, like, because it's sort of, I just reckon the more I can sort of feel out, almost like as best I can, feel what he's feeling is like the most honest way the story can be told, like for certain aspects of the story. Yeah, so it's, yeah. Yeah, it's a whole array of things at the moment. But yeah, as far as progress goes, sorry, it's yeah, I'd still say the edit's really rough. But again, that's sort of what the funding for projects this sort of big and time consuming can just contribute so massively to. But yeah, there's so much. Yeah, really. Yeah, we're chasing the elements. Like that's a really big part of it. As you mentioned earlier, like the escarpment and stuff with its own microclimate. Like that's a big part of the storytelling for certain chapters is using that weather and the elements to visually articulate like his pretty, yeah, insane ups and downs. Yeah. And sort of draw on that correlation of humans to nature and things like that. But then, yeah, there's some far more literal stuff. And then, yeah, sort of also just still brainstorming, like I guess in my own mind, symbolic things that outside of the weather and, you know, relatively fresh ways to tell like some really hard to talk about chapters as well. Like, yeah, really, yeah, vulnerable stuff. Just doing it justice, I guess, because, yeah, I think if we can get that aspect of things right, then, yeah, we really can't go wrong. And yeah, I guess that's, for me personally, it's just making sure we, with yeah, Nick's mass, big input from Nick as well, sorry. Yeah, just getting those things right. But, yeah, we've got a long way to go, Luke, for sure. Like, and that's nature of the beast. But feel really good, again, from all the people that are involved. And, yeah, even if the Kickstarter's not going great, in all honesty, and that's like, really, that's on me because, yeah, I think I've just made a heap of mistakes, but that's sort of been, again, the motto, like if we don't make mistakes, like you're not really learning. So not really negging out too hard on it, just trying to give it a red hot go. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Well, man, with this potty, we're going to have to get it up on socials and make sure we, you know, promote the hell out of it because it's a really worthy project. And as we all know, Nick has given so much joy and so much entertainment, so many crew out there through his bodyboarding feats. It had only been fair to let him tell one more story with himself, you know, or if not one of many, just to kind of demonstrate the next stage of his life. Like, I think it's a really like worthy project. What could I ask? What you guys are up to at the moment with the amount?
Oh yeah, for sure. Had a little boost the Savo, but I think we're around about like percentage wise, we are at. Where's the dashboard? 1 sec, sorry, brother. I think we're about $9,000. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So 38% funded. We've raised $9,600 at the moment. Yeah.
Sweet. That's definitely getting it.
Yeah. Well, that's just from heaps of like really sort of generous donations too. Like the average donation has been like around about $100, which me and Nick were baffled by because we were like, oh, like we sort of started off being like, don't want anyone to be emptying their wallets or anything. It was more like, oh yeah, you know, if you had like $5, like just a cup of coffee or $5, $10, even $1, like collectively, like that's how we thought it sort of might've worked. Yeah. So that's the only thing, like massive thank you to everyone listening, including yourself, Luke, who's donated. Like it really does mean the world. The feedback's been, yeah, incredible. And it's been really, it's been amazing as well. Like for Nick too, just like, just feels so, I guess it is validation in a sense, but like it took a long time to even convince him of how like amazing his story was. But yeah, doing this has put both of us out of our comfort zones. And something neither of us thought we'd ever do. Yeah. So even if we fall short, like there's been heaps of positives in a hypothetical negative, but yeah, if you were able to like, yeah, throw in $1 or $5, if you're able, like, yeah, that's all we're sort of we're ever asking for from the surfing community. Yeah. But, yeah, I think we're, what are we, 28th? Yeah, we've got, like, 60-something hours to get there. So, yeah, again, if you can contribute, it's so appreciated. If you can't, it's so understandable. It's so fine. But to all that have shared or, you know, done anything to sort of contribute to us getting even this far,
Also, sorry, Brad, I didn't interrupt. Did this have a time frame? I thought it was continued on until you reached the amount.
Nah, dude, Kickstarter's cutthroat. So it's like you get a month, and if we don't reach the target by the end date, which is the 31st of May, you don't get anything at all, and everyone just gets refunded. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and that's part of my mistake, not being clearer, from the get-go with that stuff. But, yeah, that's fully how it works, yeah.
That's a fucking G-up. Like, I never knew that about Kickstarter. Like, what? I thought there would just be an ongoing thing. And, like, what a stupid business model to then, like, I understand, I guess, from their point of view, you'd want larger amounts of money coming in, the time frame would probably make that happen quicker. But like, what a stupid business model if they were going to take, 7-8% of 25 grand.
Well, like, I guess that's how they've set up the platform. And I looked at other ones, and Nick and I were just like, oh, people know what Kickstarter is, which is why we went with them. But it is what it is kind of thing. Like, we knew the risks to begin with, and I mean, I can't speak much for the model. I don't know how it all came about, but I just know that's what we signed up to, I guess. But
For sure. I just got to think, like, in my head doing quick maths, that 7 or 8% of 25 grand, you're looking at around $2,000. Like, it's not
well that's why I put it up, because we were sort of hoping for around about 20, but I was like, 2022 or something, like when we sort of budgeted it up a bit, and I was like, well, maybe we should bump it up to just to sort of, cover those fees alongside, whatever other costs come with the photos and the tier rewards and stuff, which is fine. That's all part of it. But that's the system, hey.
Fuck, we just need a super wealthy investor, like some dude that's holding up the WSL, like some billionaire that's just got a little bit of cash to splash and could easily just drop the rest into a bucket, eh?
Yeah, man. Or every boog under the sun just that is able to can donate a dollar, and that'll get us there as well.
Yeah, that's true, eh? That's really true.
Yeah.
What's the date? Is it on the 31st of May, you said?
Yeah, deadline is like 10:30 in the morning in 3 days' time. Yeah.
Sweet. Well, I have to get this body out ASAP. I'm going to have to ask Elliot to really pump this one, because, let's get it going. And you're right, if it's just a dollar.
Well, that as I said, that was the mindset Nick and I had, was like, certainly not asking, wanting anyone, particularly from the Boog world, to sort of fork out any, no one's everyone's doing it pretty tough. It was just like more of a collective group sort of outlook on it, of like, if you had like a dollar, five, $10 tops, like, everyone that sort of knew Nick or wanted to get involved, like, that would get over the line. Like, I think a few of the reels I put up, we've kind of got like over 100,000 views collectively. It's just like, you only need like 1 in 4 people to donate a dollar, and we'd be there. Yeah.
That's so fucking true, man. That's so true. Obviously we're going to pump this potty out, and we're going to get it out there before the Kickstarter ends. But, just as a backup plan, man, you've probably still got time. And because Nico's a good-looking lad, let's get some money on. Only fan page is going, Like, he could really make that in a couple of days.
I've got my personal ones on the back burner, but, it's still not cutting up. I haven't shaved my feet in a couple of days. So, I will talk to Nick about that, dude.
You'd have to, bro. Get him in there. And I know a lot of bodyboards relate. Maybe him with just, like, a packet of Cruskets and some tuna, naked on a beach, and I think you'll be having money thrown in his account, eh?
I can probably just whip that up with AI too, even if he's not keen on it.
just use his image.
Yeah, dude, I've wrote all that down. Thank you, man.
Yeah, it's at GTP 4-8. Like, hats off to it. Oh, Brad, man. Dude, it's been such a nice chat having you on the potty, man. Really feel like I've got to know you a lot more and just, kind of find out your story and what you're about and what you've been currently doing in the Boog scene's epic. Like, don't want to harp on about it again, but the clips that you've made and the things that you've got in the pipeline now are just blowing people away. So, yeah, man, keep doing what you're doing, and thanks so much for coming on the lounge.
Thanks so much for having me, man. I really appreciate the time as well. It's been great.
No dramas, my bro. I'll see you real soon.
Thank you, man. Cheers.
See you, bro.
It was all a pipe dream. watching bodyboarding up on